A long time ago.
It's the ship that made the Kessel Run and left them fall apart with a great disturbance of the Force.
I told you she would never consciously betray the rebellion.
That's no more.
Contact Tri-Helium has pulling us in.
Marvel Comics Group. Adventures beyond the greatest space fantasy film of all, Star Wars. Luke defies the Empire on his home world. Return to Tatooine. Long ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there exists a state of cosmic civil war. A brave alliance of underground freedom fighters has challenged the tyranny and oppression of the awesome Galactic Empire. This is their story. Stan Lee presents Star Wars, the greatest space fantasy of all. Continuing the story begun in the film by George Lucas, Archie Goodwin, writer-editor, Carmine Infantino and Bob Wieck, artists, Jim Novak, letterer, Carl Gafford, colorist, and Jim Shooter, consulting editor. Prologue, Deep Space. Here, a meeting is in progress, a rendezvous between a House of Taggy mining explorer and an Imperial battle cruiser. If there's a bright center to this universe, you're on the world farthest from it. To Luke Skywalker, it seems ages ago that he spoke those words about his home planet. It feels as if he were a different person than the restless, inexperienced farm boy. Now he is a hero, and a warrior's mission has brought him back. Return to Tatooine. And thus begins Star Wars issue number 31, with a cover date of January 1980 and a release date of October 1979. Luke returns to Tatooine, this being the first time since leaving with Obi-Wan Kenobi, having met Han Solo and Chewbacca in the cantina, and then flying out of Tatooine, headed towards Alderaan to rescue Princess Leia. Now, Luke's mission is to recruit blockade runner pilots in aid of the Rebel Alliance. And this is all in support of their evacuation of their base on Yavin 4. So you can see we're already leading up towards the events in Empire. However, while he's there, he finds some clues to a secret plan of the House of Taggy and that they are working with the Empire. He runs into an old friend of his, Fixer, and Fixer's girlfriend. And they inform Luke when Luke goes back to his old home, that of Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, on that moisture farm, that those lands have been given to the House of Taggy by the Empire, and that they're in the process of standing up those farms, making them operational again. Luke finds this, very interesting, to say the least, particularly seeing the connection now of his once friend Fixer to the Empire. Now, Luke chooses to go to Mos Eisley next. He and C-3PO whisked away in a landspeeder and make their way to the cantina, where else, where they hope to recruit some pilots for their cause. Wouldn't they know, they end up reuniting with Han Solo and Chewbacca during a brawl, a bit of a fracas there at the cantina. And that celebration is cut short by Fixer coming into the cantina, giving Luke a heads up. You see this mixed loyalty of Fixer, him having been a friend of Luke's, but also at the same time having now this loyalty of service to the House of Taggy, letting them know that Imperial stormtroopers would be hunting Luke down. He needed to make them aware of his presence there on Tatooine, because after all, he is one of the most wanted of the rebels, having destroyed the Death Star, number one on the list for one Darth Vader. So quickly, Luke, Han, Chewbacca, C-3PO begin to try to make their way out of the cantina, but that then opens up into a shootout in the alleyways outside the cantina. This looks like a great old-fashioned Western shootout with a bunch of blasters. Quickly make their way to their speeder, and they race off into the desert. A night falls over the town of Mos Eisley, the spaceport, And there you are left on our last page with our cliffhanger. Our stormtroopers in pursuit of Luke and Han, Chewie, and C-3PO. But back at the edge of town, I've called out a troop carrier, but those rebels have a big lead. No matter, one of our blasts scored that speeder, and it's leaking coolant. It'll be burnt out by morning. If one of our desert patrols doesn't get out there, and the twin guns will. Next issue, the Jawa Express. This was another great installment of the series here. And I have to hand it to Archie Goodwin, collaborating there with Carmine Infantino for the visual storytelling, that they did a very, very fine job of bridging the time between A New Hope now heading into Empire Strikes Back. What's interesting about this specific issue is the inconsistency in continuity as it related to canon. Hence, these are Legends titles. You already have Han Solo in this book admitting that he and Chewie already paid the debt back to Jabba the Hutt and then came back here to Tatooine for hopefully some additional jobs to do. Again, we would not see that debt repayment happening at all during the Star Wars trilogy, New Hope, Empire, and into Return of the Jedi. You know, Luke, you would have the bounty hunter Boba Fett ultimately capturing Han Solo, bringing him back to Jabba for failure of paying off that debt. So it'll be interesting to see how they reconcile all of this now, because very clearly, George Lucas kept the script and the story of Empire Strikes Back in close hold, almost in a silo, and didn't want any foreshadowing happening here in the comics to spoil what would be coming up in the movie here in 1980. But at the same time, eventually he would have to divulge the script and the story and let the Marvel bullpen know what was going on so they could do the movie adaptation, the comics adaptation here of the movie that would also be coming out in 1980 in order to support the premiere of the movie. So this is an interesting high wire act, if you will, that Archie Goodwin and company here had to walk. And I think they did a fine job, and it'll be interested to see how they explain away, if you will, Han Solo's admission there in the cantina. The visuals here by Carmine Infantino are outstanding. He really does shine in anything dealing with outer space and ships. Great renderings of that Taggy Miner freighter, and of course the Imperial Cruiser. Also, he does well on landscapes, particularly some of these desert landscapes where you have the moisture farm in there. Anytime he is drawing tech equipment, really, really good stuff. The level of detail in the cantina, great. If there's anything that I have had some constructive criticism of throughout this series, is the style palette for the characters. I don't know if there was one. There seems to be a tendency amongst all of the artists, all the visual artists here, all the pencilers and even inkers, to do their own interpretation of Luke, Leia, Han. Chewbacca, C-3PO, R2, that's fairly consistent here. But anytime we're talking human faces and forms, there's been variation. And I don't know if that variation has been purposeful as far as showing excitement or emotion. We're going to distort the face a bit more. But what was originally laid down by Howard Chaykin, I don't feel has been consistently replicated throughout this series. So it's just been interesting, and you have to get used to, as a reader, saying, hey, look, this is this artist's interpretation of what Han, Luke, Leia look like, and
bring that on board. And once you are used to that art style, then hey, it's not as much of a visual distraction. So that is the only constructive criticism that I've got of this series thus far. Other than that, it is spectacular. Oh, and the thing that is consistent on the style is the costuming of Luke, Han, and the like. So, and Leia. So from that standpoint, that is good from a consistency perspective. I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes next here with the Jawa Express. I'm sensing that we're heading out to the desert, that our heroes are going to try to conceal themselves within the local landscape by the use of maybe commandeering one of those Jawa sand crawlers or hiding out with them so as to evade the hot pursuit of the Imperial stormtroopers.
Obi-Wan, take us out.
Your destiny lies upon a different path from mine. The Force will be with you. Always.
This Marvel Legends comic book series is dedicated in loving memory of Charles Lippincott, who George Lucas hired in late 1975 to join the first Star Wars production as Vice President of Advertising, Publicity, Promotion, and Merchandising. To quote George, "Charlie was one of the founding pillars of the Star Wars films and phenomenon. He began in earnest the concept of licensing motion pictures at a time when only other company doing so was Disney. Charlie was the one who said early on that we can make this work, and was the first person to both develop Star Wars licensing and engage with the fans. He had insights into marketing and public relations that were truly unparalleled, and prime example of that is San Diego Comic-Con today. Charlie is widely credited for setting the trajectory of Star Wars fandom with his grassroots-style convention presentations beginning in 1976, well before the release of the first film. Those early appearances included Mark Hamill, who accompanied Charlie on a promotional tour for Star Wars. This barnstorming of conventions celebrating science fiction, fantasy, and comic books resulted in movie theaters welcoming large crowds of fans on Star Wars opening day, due in large part to Charlie's early promotional efforts. In addition, Charlie sought out the very first comic book and toy deals with Marvel and Kenner, now Hasbro, respectively. Two iconic legacies that continue to this day. Thank you, Charlie, for Star Wars comics becoming a reality. And that's what this Legends series is all about. The Force will be with him always.